Probably you have heard of Hapley, the entomologist. If so, you know at least of the great feud between him and Professor Porkins. It was war to the knife. At times, the Royal Entomological Society meetings resembled nothing so much as the Chamber of Deputies. On the whole, I fancy Porkins was nearer the truth than Hapley. But in 1891, Porkins, whose health had been bad for some time, published some work upon the mesoblast of the death's head moth. What the mesoblast of the death's head moth may be does not matter a rap in the story. But the work was far below Porkins' usual standard, and gave Hapley an opening he had coveted for years. He rent Porkins to tatters in the form of a paper upon the development of moths in general, a paper which must have covered Porkins with shame. It was murderous in argument and utterly contemptuous in tone, an awful thing for the declining years of a man's career. The world of entomologists waited breathlessly for the rejoinder from Porkins. But the rejoinder from Porkins was to catch influenza, proceed to pneumonia, and die. It was perhaps as effectual a reply as he could make. There could be no reasonable doubt that the fret of the defeat had contributed to the death of Porkins. Hapley could not forgive Porkins for dying. For 20 years, he had worked hard almost entirely with reference to Porkins. He had gradually worked up to a climax in this last controversy. It had killed Porkins, but it had also thrown Hapley out of gear, so to speak, and his doctor advised him to give up work for a time and rest. So Hapley went down into a quiet country village and thought day and night of Porkins. At last he determined to make a fight for it. Perhaps the study of some new branch of science would be the best diversion. And very soon he was hard at work in his habitual strenuous fashion. It was on the third day that Hapley became aware of a novel addition to the local fauna. He was working late at the microscope, and like all experienced microscopists, he kept both eyes open. One eye was over the instrument, with the other Hapley saw, as it were, without seeing, only dimly conscious of the room beyond. But suddenly his attention drifted from one eye to the other. The tablecloth was tapestry, and the pattern was in gold, with a small amount of crimson and pale blue upon a greyish ground. At one point, the pattern seemed displaced, and there was a vibrating movement. Hapley suddenly moved his head back and looked with both eyes. It was a large moth or butterfly. It was strange it should be in the room at all, for the windows were closed. Stranger far that to Hapley, the great entomologist, it was altogether unknown. He suddenly thought of Porkins. Nothing would have maddened Porkins more. And Porkins was dead. Something about the head and body of the insect became singularly suggestive of Porkins. "Confound Porkins," said Hapley. "But I must catch this." Before he was in a striking position, however, the moth had risen and was fluttering round the room. Once Hapley struck and missed, then again. The third time, he hit his microscope. The instrument swayed, struck and overturned the lamp, and fell noisily upon the floor. The lamp turned over on the table, and very luckily went out. Hapley was left in the dark, and with a start, he felt the strange moth blunder into his face. It was maddening. He had no lights. If he opened the door of the room, the thing would get away. And in the darkness, he saw Porkins quite distinctly laughing at him. Porkins had ever an oily laugh. He swore furiously and stamped his foot on the floor. There was a timid rapping at the door. Then it opened perhaps a foot, and very slowly the alarmed face of the landlady appeared behind a pink candle flame. "What was that fearful smash?" she said. "Has anything?" The strange moth appeared fluttering about the chink of the door.
"Shut that door!"
said Hapley, and suddenly rushed at her. The door slammed hastily, and Hapley was left alone in the dark. In the pause, he heard his landlady scuttle upstairs, lock her door, and dragged something heavy across the room. It became evident to Hapley that his conduct and appearance had been strange and alarming. Confound the moth! And Porkins! He felt his way into the hall and found some matches, and with a lighted candle he returned to the sitting room. No moth was to be seen. Hapley decided to give up the moth and go to bed. But all night long his sleep was broken by dreams of the moth, Porkins, and his landlady. In the morning, one thing was very clear to him. His landlady could not possibly understand. After breakfast, he saw her in the garden and decided to go out and talk to reassure her. But she looked at him suspiciously and kept walking as he walked, so that there was always a bed of flowers or a row of beans or something of the sort between them. After a while, he began to feel singularly irritated at this, and presently he went out for a walk. The moth, or butterfly, trailing an odd flavour of Porkins with it, kept coming into that walk. Once he saw it quite distinctly, upon an old stone wall, but going up to it, he found it was only two lumps of grey and yellow lichen. In the afternoon, Hapley called upon the vicar. They sat in the little arbour and smoked.
"Look at that moth!"
said Hapley suddenly, pointing to the edge of a wooden table.
"Where?" said the vicar.
"You don't see a moth on the edge of the table there?"
said Hapley.
"Certainly not," said the vicar.
Hapley was thunderstruck. Clearly the man saw nothing. That night, Hapley found the moth crawling over his counterpane. He sat on the edge of the bed in his shirt sleeves and reasoned with himself. He battled for his sanity with the same silent energy he had formerly displayed against Porkins. He felt as if it were still a struggle with Porkins. He was well versed in psychology. He knew that visual illusions do come as a result of mental strain. But the point was, he did not only see the moth. He had heard it when it touched the edge of the lampshade, and when it hit against the wall. And he had felt it strike his face in the dark. He looked at it. It was not at all dreamlike. He saw the hairy body and the short, feathery antennae, the jointed legs. And he suddenly felt angry with himself for being afraid of a little insect. His landlady had got the servant to sleep with her that night because she was afraid to be alone. In addition, she had locked the door and put the chest of drawers against it. About 11, they had ventured to put the candle out and had both dozed off to sleep when they woke up with a start. They heard slippered feet going to and fro in Hapley's room. A chair was overturned and there was a violent dab at the wall. Then a china mantel ornament smashed upon the fender. Suddenly the door of the room opened, and they heard Hapley upon the landing. They clung to one another, listening. He seemed to be dancing upon the staircase and down into the hall. They heard the umbrella stand go over and the fanlight break. Then the bolt shot and the chain rattled. He was opening the door. They hurried to the window. It was a dim grey night, and they saw Hapley, looking like a ghost in his shirt and white trousers, running to and fro in the road and beating the air. While they argued who should go down and lock the door, he returned. He was walking very fast, and he came straight into the house, closed the door carefully, and went quietly up to his bedroom. Then everything was silent.
"Mrs. Colville,"
Hapley called down the staircase next morning,
"I hope I did not alarm you last night."
"You may well ask that," said Mrs. Colville.
"The fact is, I am a sleepwalker, and the last two nights I've been without my sleeping mixture. There's nothing to be alarmed about, really. I will go over the down to Shoreham and get some stuff to make me sleep soundly. I ought to have done that yesterday."
But halfway over the down, by the chalk pits, the moth came upon Hapley again. The thing fluttered into his face, and he struck at it with his hat in self-defense. Then rage, the old rage, the rage he had so often felt against Porkins, came upon him again. He went on leaping and striking at the insect. Suddenly, he trod on nothing and fell headlong. Happily found himself sitting on the heap of flints in front of the opening of the chalk pits, with a leg twisted under him. The strange moth was still fluttering round. He struck at it with his hand, and turning his head, saw two men approaching. One was the village doctor, and it came into his mind that no one would ever be able to see the strange moth except himself, and that it behoved him to keep silent about it. Late that night, however, after his broken leg was set, he was feverish and forgot his self-restraint. He soon caught sight of the moth resting close to his hand by the nightlight on the green tablecloth. The wings quivered. With a sudden wave of anger, he smote at it with his fist, and the nurse woke up with a shriek. "That moth!" he said. And then, "It was fancy. Nothing." He knew he was a lost man if he did not keep himself in hand. But as the night waned, the fever grew upon him. About 5, just as the dawn was grey, he tried to get out of bed and catch the moth, though his leg was afire with pain. The nurse had to struggle with him. On account of this, they tied him to the bed. The moth grew bolder and crawled over his face, and happily wept, swore, screamed, prayed for them to take it off him, unavailingly. The doctor was a blockhead and quite ignorant of mental science. He simply said there was no moth. And until the leg was healed, Happily was kept to his bed, with the imaginary moth crawling over him. So now Happily is spending the remainder of his days in a padded room, worried by a moth that no one else can see. The asylum doctor calls it hallucination. But Happily, when he is in his easier mood and can talk, says it is the ghost of Porkins, and consequently a unique specimen and well worth the trouble of catching.